Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast about children's development from the Center for Inclusive Childcare.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel. I'm the executive director, and I'm here today with a longtime colleague, friend. I mean, we started out way back. How many years? Maybe 30 years ago?
It was 1996.
Yeah. Oh, so like almost 30 years, 29.
Because I was getting ready to have my fourth baby.
Yeah. And I was engaged. I just wasn't even married yet. Oh my gosh. So Corey Woosley is here with me today. And Corey is a professor at Minneapolis College. She's a longtime early childhood expert and advocate in our field. And she's a parent of a child with special needs. And today we're going to talk about navigating sibling dynamics, especially when there's a child that might have some unique needs in a family. And siblings really play an important role, and their perspective is often forgotten, and we don't talk about it a lot. And so Corey's going to help us talk through some of the things that we as educators of young children spending time and caring for them should know and should be watching for. And I'm super excited for this conversation, Corey.
Me too. It's kind of been my life for 33 years. So
I know. Yeah. And so why is it important to have this conversation today?
I would say that as a parent, and then also being in the field for 45 years with a focus on a lot of inclusive childcare, I guess is what we would say, is that we do talk about the child with the disability or the child with the special need. And we spend so much time saying, how are we going to help that child, that we often forget there's a family at home. And I guess to a little caveat on that is we don't necessarily forget the family at home. We talk about the mom and dad, but do we talk about the siblings? Do we address their needs? Do we think about the attention that's maybe not on them as much as we would like it to be?
Right. And I'm excited about having this conversation and really bringing it forward. And also, Corey has just written a self-study for us as well on this subject. And we're super excited to have that out for all of you to be accessing this content in a little more in-depth way than our conversation today on the podcast. But I think that that's so important because when we see, we're going to get into this, but when you think about the sibling of a child, and especially for those of us who've been in the field for a long time and have supported inclusive care, there have been situations where you think, oh, that child, that sibling is so responsible and so put together and so, you know, all those things. And we don't realize that sometimes that's happening and not necessarily super helpful to that child. And so I think that when let's just jump into some of the topics that you've focused on in your research for the self-study, and we'll just talk about those topics and delve in a little bit deeply.
Perfect. So what you said about the focus not being on the child or the sibling is really true. And I bring that out both as seeing it in my years in the profession, but also as a parent. And not only as a little one, you know, some of the ramifications of that role that we put on the sibling with a disability has lifelong effects. And you see it in, because my children are now in their 30s. My son with a disability is 33, but I can see the pressure that that I did put on the siblings, and without their acceptance, without their permission, not that I was a bad mom or thinking, so I don't want anybody to think that, because obviously your focus is highly on how am I surviving day to day, but taking into the fact what I know now and what I'm hoping by the self-study and the podcast is to let people see you take a pause. Remember that child with a disability, the child with special needs is going to be that child, but who else is in the house with you?
Yeah.
And what are you asking them to do? Mm-hmm. And just taking that minute can help save them a little bit of anxiety and stress as they get older.
Yeah. Because there's such a deep love and commitment to that connection, I think. Mm-hmm. And so a term that's been coming out that I've heard and you've touched on in the self-study is the glass child.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I hesitated at first when I used the term because I thought, oh, it's, you know, a buzzword. I don't want to use it. So I actually checked in with a couple of my sons and I described it and said, did you feel like this? And first of all, they said, oh, Mom, it's a buzzword. And then I go, well, I already knew that. So I'm just checking. And yes. And so what, if you think about the word glass, if you think about seeing through, that's kind of what it is. I'm seeing through and looking beyond them to their brother or their sister that has a special need. And I'm forgetting what their needs are. And they are very unique people as well. But you're almost ignoring and putting them behind. And then as we talk a little bit more about some of the things we're going to see with this child, those will come out too. But so the term glass children, while I hesitated, it really came to light as I read more and I talked with people too and did a little independent research. The term is real. There really is. We're looking through, we're not seeing because we're so focused on helping this other child because they're oftentimes more vulnerable.
Yes.
You look at their vulnerability and we also, as you know, and I've talked a lot about is this loss of a dream. And so you're focused a little bit on yourself and, oh my, what happened? How can I get through this? And so there is this whole grief process that I emphasize in the self-study for families, but also for siblings. They are going through because they're often young. It looks different, but a lot of it's similar too.
And I think I love that you're really highlighting the parents' role in this and also not putting guilt and shame on that parent, because we know, and you know firsthand how, as you said, you're just trying to survive day to day. And so the plan that you had for what family life would maybe look like, and none of us really know what that's going to look like until we have our family, but the dynamics are so different than anything you ever planned for or thought of. And way back when we first knew each other and met each other, we were going through Project Exceptional training and becoming trainers for the state. And I remember the activity where we talk about all the other people that are in that family's life. And, you know, you're thrown into this situation. And I've heard this from many parents over the years where your life is not your own anymore because you're having all these other caregivers and you have all these expectations. And so that parent is holding that. And then they have other children. And so this sibling, raising that sibling relationship up is so important. And I think that you've included some really great videos in the self-study that have even folks, experts in the field that are doing research on this topic had experienced it themselves as being a sibling. That's so interesting to hear their perspectives on it. So I'm excited to have people dig into the self-study. So when we think about those characteristics of that sibling, what do we maybe want to look for? What are we noticing when we have a child in our care that might have a sibling with special needs?
So because they're often put in a role of helping and supporting. And this was a term I hadn't seen before, but I've probably heard it 10 times since I wrote this, but this term parentification, and I'm just going to throw this out there in a podcast nationally is I heard Khloe Kardashian say it because she she said, I always am taking care of everybody.
So, interesting. You know, speaking of a buzzword.
I know. It just popped out. I go, wait, I knew that word before her. So I should be famous. Anyways, that really is where we're putting the role of being a parent on the child. And so I think about the number of times I asked Joe's brother, who was 15 months younger than him, to watch him at the bus stop, make sure he gets his backpack. Don't let him forget his lunch. Yet every day, Joe forgot his lunch, his own lunch. So where was it my priorities? Was it my looking through the glass child? What was I thinking that this one 15 months younger was always taking on that role? And that, you know, so I think that's important to pause and say, am I doing this? And while I talk as a parent, I do want to emphasize that so many of the techniques and the things we're seeing should work for early childhood educators too. I think about family childcare homes where the children are often together. And are you saying, well, what does that child need to the sibling? The sibling is three.
Yes,
well,
right.
I'm three. I don't know. What?
Yeah, right.
What are you talking
yes.
about? So
that's a good point where this yeah. one of them might be having a tantrum and really upset. And you're asking the other child to interpret for their sibling who maybe doesn't have the verbal skills to be able to tell what they
exactly.
need.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, we probably do that with, I'm so glad I'm not an oldest sibling because
yeah.
I do not want to be that responsible, but we may do that for older siblings, but imagine sure. doing that for the sibling of someone who they don't really get it either. They don't really understand right. what their brother or their sister's doing.
Yeah.
So that parentification was a huge thing, and pushing too much on a child that really needs to be a child. So some of the other things were the people pleaser, because mm-hmm. they are often, going back to that glass piece, they're looked, we don't see them. So yes. if I do this, so it can go two ways, just like with sure. any other child, I can be a people pleaser and I'm always there to help you, or I can act out.
Yes.
So, right. you know, if you are a parent, if you have that child in your care, that sibling in your care, you know, do your detective work. I think back to some of the modules for CICC, the nurture, yeah. the detective, we're always a detective. Is it because, are they acting out because they didn't sleep? Are they acting, or are they acting out because they want to be seen? We
yes.
know most of the time children act out, it's simply because they want attention.
Yeah.
So this child needs some attention, and they may need more attention. You're giving yeah. so much to this other child. Take a break, do some one-on-one time.
Yeah.
So,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
How about the, when you think about even that sibling taking care of themselves,
right.
you know, tell us a little bit more of what you've noticed and what you learned in the work that you've done.
Yeah. So when I think about their emotions and their feelings, and I think about how important that is to early childhood educators in general and working with feelings, we do need to make sure that we're giving the sibling time to reflect on how are they feeling. Some of the other things we talked about was, where is their sense of self-worth? Because they're so, just like a parent too. And I think so much of my identification was being a parent of a child with a disability. So is that sibling the same thing? Are they so tied up in my brother has autism, or my sister has a traumatic brain injury?
Yeah.
Who am I too? And,
yeah.
and they feel isolated because none of their friends have the same situation. You know, and I think you'll see some denial too. You'll see, I mean, whether it's the grief process or later in their life mm-hmm. or as a sibling, they're a little embarrassed by the wackadoodle oh. things that their brother, and I say that with love in my heart, but
yes,
some
sure.
of the things they did, Sam did, I was like, whoa,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, or they're a little embarrassed. They feel a little isolated. They feel mm-hmm. afraid. Is Bobby going to want to play with me because that's my brother and he just did that? So,
yes.
you know,
right.
but also then we go back to that parentification and that protection.
Yeah.
But I have that, you know, and one of the things I put in the beginning of the self-study, and we know this, or anybody that has a sibling, this is your longest relationship in your life. So imagine if that relationship is taking over your life. And a lot of us have siblings that are difficult or harder, or maybe we're not close, but we still, there are people, you know, they are
yeah,
who we are, and they are part of who we are. So we will protect them as well.
And thinking about the building friendships and trying to fit in and all of those mm-hmm. things, especially, and it kind of goes through developmental stages where
yes, it does.
That, you know, there will be moments within all those stages of development that the sibling, will feel like I'm embarrassed, but I feel mm-hmm. guilty for being embarrassed because I love
yeah.
my sibling and I'm not supposed to feel this way. I mean, just the tug, the pulling inside mm-hmm. internally back and forth for that sibling has to be really stressful.
I would think so. I mean,
yes.
I that's what I'm hearing and reading, you know, and I try to live this through what my children see, what peers see, what I know from other people, but I personally have not been there either. So,
right.
you know, you have
right.
to kind of view and see. And I think about my most probably prevalent advice for early childhood educators is trial and error. Yeah. Things work, things don't. But but recognition is going to be a huge piece. Recognize that this child is more than the child's disability. That's such a common thing we say anyways. You are more than your disability. So is the family. So is the sibling.
Yes, right. That identity of them as a person themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also thinking, and you know, and this kind of goes to that internal feeling piece, but having to sometimes probably negate the way they really are feeling or set it aside. And it kind of goes back to that glass child feeling of I don't matter, my feelings don't matter, because that parentification as well. I mean, you're just putting all these things on the sibling to hold it together. Don't make any challenges for your parents, because look at what they already are dealing with.
Yeah.
But I need them because I'm sad and I'm upset. So, and what you were saying earlier too, is the acting out, they might feel they need to go to the extremes to get attention. And that's hard.
Yeah. It is. It is. When I was writing the class and I was thinking about that acting out, I also, one of my favorite things we've ever talked about at CICC is the four mistaken goals, where you look at attention and
escape, obtain,
control.
Yeah.
But when you think about the sibling with the of the child with a disability too, yes, they want attention, but they also have some of those other underlying pieces too going on in their life, because there's a lot of stress in that life. And one of the potential ramifications of being the sibling was PTSD, anxiety, depression, which we don't necessarily see at a really young age, although I think, was it last month that was Mental Health Month? And so many of those things were brought out to us on what we are seeing. Well, this is one of the potential radar razors that I would put in there too, is, you know, my life isn't the same as the next door neighbor, and I'm going to have some needs too.
Right. And if that child doesn't, I mean, and this kind of goes into, I think the next thing that you're going to talk about is that whole sense of self-worth and that, that feeling that their needs matter. If they don't have a close relationship with someone in their life to talk about it, even when they are able to, that's when some of those things can start to fester.
Yes. Yes. And oftentimes, sorry, mom and dad, you're not the person right now to talk to. You know, oftentimes you are not, you're not working for them. So until you figure out, and, you know, going through the grief process and navigating doctors and all those things takes time, but at some point you need to focus back in on your, on all the children. But who could that person be? Who could, could it be that early childhood educator? You know, could it, who could it be? Could it be an aunt or somebody that can take that child? One of the things I remember saying a lot of times back in my early days at Project Exceptional was, you know, stop asking me what I need and just do something. Just do something. Stop asking the child, because the child's 3 or 4 or 5, what they need, just do something. Trial and error. Maybe taking them to the park doesn't work because they see all these typical developing siblings and that's creeping them out, you know, but that's not my life. Maybe it does work. So just do something. So I used to always say back in our early days, just, you know, make me a loaf of banana bread. My son said, yeah, I really hate banana bread, mom. Well, we'll switch that story up. So I actually don't like banana bread anymore either.
but some sort of bread. Just do it. But I think that that's a common theme when I just facilitated a panel at the Minnesota Department of Health's children and youth with special health care needs. And we had a parent panel at the end of the conference, and I had the honor of facilitating the conversation with parents of children with some special health needs. And that was a common theme of, don't ask me what I need or say, let me know what I can do to help you, but just help me. You're not going to call. Just show up and do it. And I think that that is, that's something that, if that's one thing that's a takeaway for a relationship, when you know that someone you care about has some, has a heavy burden, just do something.
Just do something. Just show up and recognize that it's a family unit. It's more than just, don't just focus on, don't come over and focus on, oh, you know, little Bobby, I'm so sorry you've got this disability or whatever it is you're going to say. Look beyond them. Look to that child and stop looking through the glass child and look at them.
Right, right. And there's also a deep sense of feeling alone when you're in that spot.
Yeah. And that isolation. And I'm different. And I remember feeling that as a parent. And I now can only imagine what my children felt and what, you know, other children felt too. You know, but what I want to emphasize too is, because I started doing this, writing this class, and then I thought, oh my gosh, did I ever screw up as a mom?
You know, you
can't, we all do a little bit. You can't change the past. For those of you that listen and, you know, and think I did this all wrong, move on. You know, you can't change it. For those of you that listen and haven't done it yet, take a point or two, remember the glass child, but never, you know, try not to beat yourself up, because we're all learning. And certainly on this journey of being a parent of a child with a disability, you're in a new boat. You're on a new ship. So.
Yeah. And I think that that's so important to remember. And so as we wrap up our conversation, Corey, on this, and think about our listeners who are educators working with children day to day, what are some like tips that you can give to just remind them to look up and look out and not look through?
Yeah. The attention is huge. The attention, what is it? What is the attention is? And one of the things I tell my students at the college all the time is, 2 minutes, you know, can you take 2 minutes to focus in and see what they're doing, just to sit down and do some Stanley Greenspan expanding the play stuff, you know, extending the play, find that attention, find out what they like, find out, watch them, observe them and see what's going, know their triggers too. Is there a doctor appointment today where mom's going to be late and they're going to have to stay at childcare because they're going to the doctor? You know, mom's going to be a little bit frazzled when she comes. How can you support that child knowing that? How can you help them, give them, you know, is it giving them, my granddaughter loves to be the line leader. So being the line leader, know what, and some kids, my son Joe would have never wanted to be in front of the line.
Yeah.
In the caboose all day long, you know.
Yeah.
What is it? So help them to express feelings. Feelings are so critical. So dig into what those feelings are. Look at your four goals of mistaken behavior. I love that one chart. I'm talking about the chart. I should send it to you if you don't have it. I'm sure you do. But how am I reacting to the event, and what could I be doing differently? And, you know, probably the simplest thing you can do when they walk in the morning, don't look through them and say, hi, Bobby. Say, hi, Melissa.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to see you this morning.
Yeah.
Stop looking through, start looking at.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great way to wrap things up. Corey Woosley, thank you so much for being here and talking about this really important subject. I'm looking forward to having the self-study available and also this podcast as a companion. And we're going to get together very soon for another conversation about friendship. So we'll talk soon. Thanks, Corey.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more resources, visit us at inclusivechildcare.org.